What's going on, everybody? I hope this finds you striving and thriving and doing absolutely amazing. My name is Brian Martin. I'm a second grade teacher and host of the Teaching Champions podcast. And today I'm joined by Dr. Janelle Morse. Dr. Morris has been in the field of education for over 30 years, and currently she serves as the role of superintendent. She's passionate about education, and she's dedicated her life to ensuring that each child graduates from high school ready for college or for a career. And in this conversation, listen as Dr. Morris dives into leadership lessons that she's learned from her various experiences. Listen as she discusses the importance of building relationships, creating trust, and being authentic. Listen as we dive into the future of education, AI, and planning for the future. And if you enjoy this conversation, please share. The Teaching Champions community is all about supporting, encouraging, and lifting each other up. And by sharing, you're helping amplify the voices of special educators like Dr. Morris. Now let's get into this conversation, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. I am super excited for this episode. We have someone that is extremely special, someone that has so much knowledge. And one thing that I always say is we can learn so much if we take the time to stop and to listen to other people. And that holds so much truth for the people that we're surrounded by on a daily basis. And I am extremely lucky today because I am joined by my superintendent, Dr. Morris. Dr. Morris, welcome to the Teaching Champions podcast, my friend.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, well, I thank you for being on. And for the people who aren't familiar with you, would you mind sharing a little bit about your journey?
All right. Thank you so much for asking. I'll give you guys a very high level of my journey because I could be here for hours talking about every single minute that got me here. Mm-hmm. But I've been in education for a very, very, very long time, at least 3 decades. I'm not going to tell my age. I'll let everybody do their arithmetic otherwise. But 30 years in education, loved every minute of it. Some things that I've done have been being a science teacher, loved being a science teacher. It is like one of my favorite things ever. I taught middle school science and I also taught high school science, and just so much fun doing that. And then I became an administrator. My scientific background really lent to doing stuff in data and administration of assessments. So I worked in research and data and assessments and loved every minute of that. That was the great time that I had in the Buffalo Public Schools. I was there for 30 years. So once again, you guys realize I started education when I was 5. So I'll let everybody do the math.
Absolutely.
But then as COVID came along, I was given a great opportunity by a superintendent in Rochester to be a deputy superintendent for her. And that was a great experience. So I was very happy to be able to go to Rochester and become the deputy of teaching and learning for a year. And then I was able to move over and do a role as deputy of operations and innovate systems innovation as well. And the great thing about that experience was I was able to kind of learn everything within the umbrella of an organization and working on that systematically. So that was pretty cool. And then I was able to see the opportunity for Olean, and I was like, this looks awesome. So my family and I, we came down here and we walked up the street and saw the squirrels. And I was like, any place that has these colorful squirrels is a place I need to be. I love squirrels. So we get here and I put my hat in the ring, and I was so fortunate and happy to have been selected to do this role. And I love it, love it, love it. I love being in Olean. Everybody is amazing. The kids are awesome. The staff is absolutely amazing. And I just love every minute I have that I'm here. So that's how I got here. Just a little bit personally, I'm one of eight. So that means I'm very competitive by nature, because you can't have eight brothers and sisters and not be competitive. So yeah, we're ridiculous, but love them. My dad's just celebrated his 80th birthday, so I'm going to have a big party for him. And, awesome. You know, just life is awesome right now. So yeah, I'm just happy to be on.
And we are happy to have you here too there, Dr. Morse. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned the squirrels, because for all the listeners out there, I guess our hometown here, we just have all these random squirrel statues all scattered throughout the town. It's, I guess it's our thing. One neat thing that is part of your journey, Dr. Morse, and we were talking about it a little bit, is you come from Buffalo. You come from Rochester, and for the listeners, you're talking like the Buffalo Bills. So you're talking urban area. You're talking Rochester, another big city, versus Olan. And maybe you could give the listeners a little background, like what's the dynamics like between those two places and then Olan?
Well, it's definitely a change in scale, that's for sure. There are 60 schools in Buffalo. There are 60 schools in Rochester. We had 32,000 in Buffalo, 22,000 in Rochester. And just the scale is so different. The budget in Olean is $57 million. Just the grants alone that I managed just for the coronavirus relief program was $330 million for Rochester alone. That did not include the overall budget. That did not include our general fund. And just the scale is hugely different. However, there are a lot of similarities. So when I got here, as far as the organizational structure of a small city district, there were some things that were similar and there were a lot of things that were different, but my experience in Buffalo and Rochester allowed me to catch on quickly and allowed me to go ahead and say, okay, well, you know, we don't have to do a budget vote in Buffalo, but we have to do one here. But here's how the overall budget is structured. Very similar in many ways to how we do that in the big urban district. The communication pathways are very different. A lot of times you have one person who manages one thing, and that's their thing to manage. So you have one person who does staff development, and they'll have an entire department, right? Mm-hmm. But here you might have four people that are doing professional development for all of our people. So it's very different, but I really enjoyed the challenge of learning how to work in a small city school district, and that's been fantastic to do.
Awesome. Now here's a question for you. Always so my journey, like I've taught at both elementary schools in Olan. I've been in the same grade level for a long time, but you have this wealth of knowledge because going through Buffalo City School District, going to the Rochester School District, coming down here. So you've been a bunch of different places, been exposed to a lot of different people. What would you say are some of the biggest leadership lessons that you've learned along the way?
Definitely the biggest leadership lesson is everything hinges around relationships. That is so critical. Just a lot of times you might get to a point where things are difficult, or you anticipate them being difficult. And really, it's the relationship that you have with the people that you need to work to navigate something through. It's that relationship that helps you come to a decision or a solution that's in the best interest of your students, of the community, of your staff. It's that relationship. And I try to be as big of a straight shooter as possible. So I try to be trustworthy. If I say I'm going to be somewhere at 6, I try to be there. And it really just makes my stomach have a pit in the middle of it if I'm not able to do what I say I'm going to do. I try to be honest. I try, if I've made a mistake, I try to admit it and work to rectify it. All of that works to establish relationships. You all didn't know me when I got here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's important that I portray myself as myself. And that's something I've learned. I learned that in Buffalo. I was working with data. The data was very complex. And people immediately thought, oh, the data's wrong. The data's wrong. The data's wrong. And I said, no, we're going to work this through together. And we would take it one step at a time, but we would do it together. That relationship took away a lot of that anxiety. It didn't eliminate mm-hmm. it completely. But the data was a complex thing for many people. There were a lot of accountability things that happened as a relation to the data. And us having this relationship that we can do this together, it's us, not data against you, that allowed right. a lot of people to be able to work through that together. So I think relationships are really critical to most of the stuff that we do in education. We're in a people business, and we're working with students and staff, and everybody has something that you can connect with them about. You know, our students, mm-hmm. they all have something we connect about. And we're all human, and that's what makes our work that we do every day so beautiful.
Yes, and I love how you talk about, like, that message that you send. It's not, you know, like, data versus you. It's us. You know, it's yeah. sending that message that we're going to work through this together. We're going to put out the best product for the students and with the students. Say, you know, we're going to work right. together with you as well. And I love how you talk about all of us have something in common. If we look right. for it, we can find it.
That's right.
Awesome. Now, we were talking about beforehand that about AI and how that's going to affect the classrooms. What are you seeing from a topic that the superintendent level, the effect that AI is going to have?
So I'm so glad we're going to have this conversation, because AI is both exhilarating to consider the possibility, and then it's also a little scary, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I would make sure that I emphasize is AI is something that we're using day to day in almost every element of our lives. So without going into every single place that you're encountering AI, every time you log into your bank account, you're using AI. Every time you use your cell phone and it prompts you for a word, you're using AI. A lot of times our email system will say, you wrote it this way. Are you sure you don't want to write it a different way? And, you know, it's helpful advice, right? It's our job as educators, not only to utilize these tools to help us be better, but to also teach our young ones how to use it responsibly. And mm-hmm. so that's where I'm excited. I'm excited about the different elements that we can bring to our classes to help us support our students better. There are tools out there that allow us to generate differentiated instruction for our students that are very specific to their needs quickly and tailored to those needs. And it doesn't require us to start from scratch like we used to have to do, where we had to pull together a lesson plan and write each one and, you know, students will be able to do and the whole nine yards. No, you can generate this so quickly based on student learning that you've been able to measure so quickly. There are so many ways that we can do that. And then we need to teach our students how to use this responsibly. So ChatGPT is not the answer for everything. It's an answer for some things. I'll mm-hmm. give it that. But ChatGPT, it's there to help spark your thought process, but it never can replace the work that we're teaching as educators our students to be able to do, to think independently and to be able to generate authentic, independent content. So that's the awesomeness to me. It gives me a tool as an educator where I have 30 kids in front of me and each one of them have different needs. I can generate content to help build their skill and knowledge. All 30 of them, it could be a different lesson, but it's still teaching them where they are and bringing right. them all up to standard. I love that idea. But then we have the great responsibility to teach our kids. Once you go out into the world, you're going to have ChatGPT at your fingertips. You're going to have all these other ways to access AI. Here's how you can do it responsibly and still bring your thought, your intelligence, your creativity to every role that you take on.
The opportunities, what's going to happen in the future, are limitless with AI. Yeah. And but I love how you talked about, like, it is extremely important. Like, we teach the students how to use it, you know, responsibly, because it, you know, right. it can be a beautiful thing, but it can also be a dangerous thing as well if it's right. used incorrectly.
Right, because you can use it right now as a teacher and just throw in what you need it to do, but you still have to do as the end user that check to mm-hmm. make sure it's exactly what you need to put in front of students. Is it accurate? It's only as good as the information that it's building itself upon. So that's where humans are still important. That's where us as teachers, we are important, where we're showing our students, this is something where you still have to do that check. You still have to put in your creativity. I use an example of when I was in undergrad, I was doing a biology degree. I was pursuing that. And our teacher at the time for organic chemistry, he had us synthesize a molecule. I want to say it was caffeine, but I could be wrong. But the point was, if you did it the wrong way, you ended up with methamphetamines and it would be highly explosive. And the point was, you couldn't just go on the internet and find the way to generate this molecule. You had to check it, because we went on the internet to get this recipe, if you will. And many of the recipes that were out there were wrong. So if you had generated it based on what you saw, you would have made something that was flammable and explosive, and it could have killed you. That was my lesson then. Make sure that you always look your information over and make sure that it's accurate before you just throw it out there as being the gospel. I think we should take the same approach to this. Our students need to learn that, yes, you can pull it off the internet, and that's quick and that's great, but have you checked it? You got to check your work. Is that exactly what needs to be put forth to achieve your task? Showing them that process, that iterative process, is something that, as teachers, we are the best people to do, and I think we're ready for the challenge.
Yes, absolutely. So here's another question for you. With AI becoming more and more prevalent inside the classroom, but also with teacher shortages, I can see, like, the effect that it's going to have is going to be more significant. Is there, like, at the superintendent level, and I don't know, across the state with superintendents talking with one another and everything, is there the strategic plan? And what are they talking about at the top level of the role going forward and how to incorporate it?
I think what I've heard at the superintendent level is the protection of student data, the protection of data for our students. Because remember, AI is only as good as what's input. So we don't want to put our students' information in there. We don't want to put our students' names in there. So you can use it to help you generate, let's say, goals for an IEP, but don't put the student's name in there, because it shouldn't be learning that. It should be learning how to generate goals, not about our students. So we're hearing a lot about that even though ChatGPT is pretty ubiquitous at this point, we are saying make sure you're protecting your students. Make sure that you're putting those fail-safes in to make sure our students are not used in this experiment, right? But what we're also hearing is that it can be a time saver for administrators and teachers alike, and it's important to show the utility of that to teachers. So it's for adults. It's not for students, but the adults can benefit from its utility and its efficiency. But still, once again, making sure that you're going through and checking that information for accuracy, checking it for tone, checking it for being able to achieve the ultimate goal of whatever it is. If you're differentiating, is it truly differentiated for what you're looking for? So that's something that's still on there. As educators, we do this all the time. But at the superintendent level, I think they're trying to encourage us to make sure our staff know about it and that they can use it responsibly, that we are protecting our students while we're learning about it. And what our role is in making sure that the next generation is able to use this responsibly. That's what I've heard at all of the workshops I've gone to in the past couple of months.
Excellent. Well, it'll be extremely interesting, like in the next couple of years, like what happens. And it's crazy. Like we've been in the game for a little bit, Dr. Morse. I mean, we're still young, but we've been in the game in how everything has changed so much. So to see where it's going to go like 10 years from now, 15 years from now, will be unreal. And so here's a question for you, Dr. Morse, because I know that you are a big traveler. So I would love to hear, taking a little turn here, what is one or two of your favorite places that you've been? And, what makes them so amazing?
Ooh, so it's like we'll be here for hours. So I'll go ahead and start. So I didn't mention at the beginning, but my father is Nigerian. So I lived in Nigeria for 9 years. And while I was there, I was kind of upset because, you know, that was the 80s. So basically, I missed the 80s. So I've heard that the 80s were great back here in the United States. I don't know because I wasn't here. So I missed malls. I missed big hair. I missed hairspray. I missed all of those things that came along with the 80s and many movies I have not seen from the 80s. So if you just want to lose me in a conversation, make any cultural reference to something from the 80s, it will go right over my head. No idea. But living in Nigeria for 9 years was a pretty cool experience in hindsight, I can say that. I was able to go to a school where there were students from many different cultures and different countries. And that was really cool, learning different perspectives or different ways of looking at things and just being appreciative of different cultures and such. So that was really cool. And I think that once I became an adult and I had the ability to travel, I was like, wow, I want to experience all these things that I heard from my fellow students, right? So when I got to a certain level of my life, I started traveling and I would take my little girl with me and frequently my sister. So I call them my travel buddies. And some cool places that we've been included Morocco last year, all aboard. But yeah, it was like 2 years ago. 2 years ago, we went to Morocco because my brother got married there. And no, we're not from Morocco. He didn't marry anybody from Morocco. He just happened to travel to Morocco along the way and loved it so much, he and his wife, that they decided they wanted to have their wedding there. And they said that they didn't expect anyone would come because it's Morocco. And we were like, oh my gosh, first of all, you're getting married. We're coming. And two, Morocco, of course we're coming. And it was so cool. So we first went to Portugal, which was also so cool. It was just everything you see in books with the cobblestones and the really awesome, amazing food and just the history and the culture. It mm-hmm. was right there, and they speak English, so we were able to quickly learn and do things and didn't have to worry about that language barrier. That was cool. So we were there for 4 days, and then we went to Morocco, and Morocco was amazing. So first we stayed in something called a riad, which is like a Airbnb, but uh-huh. it's only in Morocco. So we stayed there, and it was in the middle of this huge market. I'd say the market was probably as big as Olean. And no way. If you've ever seen Indiana mm-hmm. Jones, they're in this market. They go, and there's just like places that are covered by fabric, and there's all these different little rooms and different passageways and such. Well, they have riads in the middle of it. So you're in an Airbnb in these tunnels right. and such. It was just the coolest thing. And there's just people selling everything. There were snake charmers. There were monkeys on people's shoulders. It was just the coolest experience ever. And then my brother got married at this beautiful place out in the desert. Mm-hmm. I'd never been anywhere like this before. It was my first time seeing a camel up close. They do spit, by the way. And it was just a beautiful, wonderful experience that I'm so glad they chose there to get married, because I can't wait to go back. It was beautiful. So that's definitely one of my favorites, Morocco and Lisbon, not just because of the happy memories of mm-hmm. being there with family and such, but it was so beautiful and the food was so inexpensive and delicious. Like, I can't rave how wonderfully delicious this food was. So that was great. And I'd also be remiss if I didn't mention Iceland was really pretty cool. Because if you see in the movies where they look like they're on the moon, they're mm-hmm. usually in Iceland, because they have that terrain because of the volcanic terrain that's been created there. But what was cool about Iceland, when we flew in, it was just flat. There were no trees. It looked like you were flying into the moon. I was like, whoa. And then we got in a car and we started driving. And you'd drive and it'd be like this flat terrain and you might see some hills or something. And then you turn the corner and it was the most beautiful waterfall, lush area that you've ever seen, ever. Like, it was in the Lord of the Rings, this waterfall, just the coolest thing. And I'm like, wow, this is one of the most awesome places ever. I can't wait to go back there again. So I'd have to say Morocco with a subset of Portugal, and then Iceland was really super cool. And I don't scuba dive, but my brother and my sister do. Mm-hmm. And so it was a sibling trip that we went on, and they did scuba diving, and they were able to do it where the tectonic plates separate between North America and Europe. So you were able to stand with one foot in North America and one in Europe. How cool is that?
That is crazy.
Yeah. That is pretty awesome. Yeah. So it was pretty awesome. I stood on the plates and they swam in between. Yeah. So that's the awesome thing about travel, just being able to go out there and experience new things and mm-hmm. just not everything I liked, but most of the things I did, like we ate puffin. Puffin is, they're these cute little, beautiful birds. They're so cute. And they ate puffin. I watched them eat puffin. Mm-hmm. But I did try whale. And It tasted like steak. I don't know that I would try it again. Mm-hmm. And then I had chicken instead of puffin, because I have to draw the line somewhere. They were too cute. How do you eat something that's that cute?
Absolutely. So here's any destinations this year, this summer? I know summer vacation's right around the corner. Anything locked in yet?
Well, right now, our main place that we're going is to Houston, Texas, to celebrate my dad, who just turned 80. And so we're going to do a big party for him. So no big trip this summer. However, other people in my family are hoping to make a big trip because my niece is trying out for the Olympics.
No
and
way.
And we're hoping, she gets, she's able to be on the Olympic team. She's competing to swim. And her time in the 50 free is like really up there. So we're really excited and rooting for her. I can't afford to go to Paris to see her compete, but I'm hoping to watch her do it.
Oh, that is so exciting. That would be amazing.
Yeah. We're so proud of her. She's been swimming since she was an infant, and she's just doing great. So, you know, my definite roots are for her, and we're hoping that she gets to go, and we can watch her being in Paris.
That would be pretty. That would be unreal. Just turn on the TV at the Olympic Games and see your niece out there. What an amazing experience.
Yeah, yeah. I'll let you know if she gets it.
Yeah, I would love that. So, Dr. Morris, one of my favorite questions that I love to ask everybody is, you know, a book recommendation. I'm a book nerd, so I love to hear what everybody else is reading. What's the book recommendation that you have? Or
all
books?
Right. Well, okay. So, first of all, I'm trying to get back into writing. I really found it a cathartic experience. And it's a great use of my brain power and be able to write fiction or nonfiction. And one of the best books that I like to go back to help guide my writing process is On Writing by Stephen King. He does an awesome job with just breaking down the writing process to me. And I really always am able to connect with his recommendations about writing and how to. So for me right now, that is in my Audible playlist that I am listening to as I'm going back and forth. The last book that I read before I started on writing again was Educated. If you haven't read this book, you should read it. It is an amazing book about this young lady who grew up in a survivalist family in Idaho. And later on, she's like, I think there's more out there than this. I want to try something. And her brother went to college. And she's like, I want to go to college. And eventually, she's able to go and pursue her education. And she goes to Cambridge and earns a PhD. So it's really well told. It's a great book. She definitely shows how, you know, you don't have to necessarily be raised in the mainstream to be able to achieve your goals. And I feel like it's so inspiring. And I love that book. And I was very sad that I had to eventually end the book by getting to the last page. But it's probably going to be one of those that I'll read again because it was just so inspiring and courageous. And I just loved her story.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds very motivational. I've seen that book listed as highly recommended. So definitely seems like one to check out. And Stephen King, the legend. So if there's anybody that you can learn to write from, I think Stephen King is a good one.
Yeah, I've been reading his book since I was 13. I've read almost everything he's ever written.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. I was the same way, like in high school, going through all his books, like Cujo and Cujo, Carrie, so many good ones.
Yeah.
Now, if someone wanted to connect with you, what would be the best way?
Well, the quickest way and probably the most fun way would be via LinkedIn. So I'm right there on LinkedIn and you can always find me there. The cool thing about our LinkedIn page is it links to my podcast. And it links to all the other wonderful things that we're doing in Olean. So by all means, I would love people to connect with us there. But also, you can always email me at gmorris@oenschools.org. Love to hear from people. I love to talk about the wonderful things that our school is doing and just love hearing those positive stories from people. I can go anywhere and people are like, where are you from? People have called it Olean. Some people have asked me, am I in charge of the new Orleans school district? I'm like, nope. And I explain where I am. And they're like, oh, that sounds awesome. I'm like, it is awesome. So we love to talk about that. Please reach out and we'll tell you more.
Awesome. And if you could have the listener walk away with one thing, what would that be?
I think I would love all of our listeners to hear the excitement in my voice when I talk about this district, to hear the excitement when I talk about our students and our staff and our community, and know that it is reflective of this wonderful, special community that we're in with the most amazing teachers, the most amazing staff, the most amazing students, and the greatest schools in the region. And just know that this is all reflective of the special place that we're in Olean. And I hope that if they want to learn more, they reach out. They want to be a part of our district. They find out a way to be able to join and be a part of our district. But just know that we have something wonderful and special going on here, and love to share it.
Yes. Yes, we do have something special going on here, and big part in your leadership there, Dr. Morris. So I just want to say,
thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time, for being here, for the energy and the wisdom that you dropped today. And on a more of a personal level, for what you do for our whole district, we truly appreciate you, Dr. Morris.
Thank you so much, Brian. And thank you for having me on here. I'm so, so glad and proud to have been on your podcast today.
Yes, it's been a lot of fun.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
This conversation was so good. Dr. Morris is so passionate about what she does. Now this is the Teaching Champions Tip, where I share three of my favorite takeaways from the conversation. And the first gem that I loved was the conversation about how Dr. Morris said one of the biggest leadership lessons that she's learned is it's all about relationships. And Dr. Morris, she expanded upon that, and she really dove in to that relationship, that it's being authentic, being you. It's all about trust, doing what you say you're going to do. And building relationships is about admitting and owning when you make a mistake. And building relationships is about recognizing that we all have something that we can connect over. And sometimes that takes work. Sometimes it means taking the lead and asking questions. But it's important to remember that we all have something that we can connect over. The second gem that I love is the importance of teaching our students how to use AI responsibly. And every year from here on out, AI is going to be more and more prevalent inside our schools. So it's of the utmost importance that we push ourselves to contribute to learning about it. And that we also have to make sure that we're teaching our students the importance of using AI responsibly. And the third gem that I loved is the passion that Dr. Morris talked about our district. The message that we send about where we work, the district that we serve in, is so important. And what I've come to learn is that people are always listening. And in every conversation, we paint a picture of our district, of our school. So be aware of the great things that are happening all around you inside your school. Shine a light on the hardworking people that are all around, and let your community know how special your school is. Hit me up at bmartinreal on X or Teaching Champions Podcast on Instagram and let me know what were a few of your favorite gems. A big thank you to Dr. Morris for sharing so many takeaways. And a big thank you to all of you for being here, for being part of the Teaching Champions community. We support, we encourage, we lift each other up. And always remember, it doesn't matter whether you're from rural America to urban America to Canada to Spain to Bahrain, we're all on that same team. We're all on that same mission, and we're always better together. Keep being amazing, my friends, and as you go out into the week, may you step into your strength, may you step into your shine, and let's build our champions up. Have a great week, everybody.